listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. While the country awaits the report from the FBI on the Kavanaugh nomination process, we spoke with Joe Loria, the editor-in-chief of ConsortiumNews.com, about two pieces at the news magazine's website, one authored by him and another by Ray McGovern, the former CIA official. McGovern's piece is called Will God Save Kavanaugh? And Joe Loria's piece is called The Kavanaugh Case, Sex, Lies, Privilege, and Plenty of Beer. Well, Joe, more insanity like we've seen over the last couple of years around the Brett Kavanaugh nomination and the hearings and the allegations against him and those that have decided that they know that he did it and those that have decided that they know that he didn't do it and they know she's lying and they know she's telling the truth and yada, 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 yada.
Well, first I want to say that you're absolutely right, that this is another insane event in American politics that is kind of hard to believe. And in fact, it's so out there what happened the other day on Thursday that Saturday Night Live, I think, had a hard time satirizing it. They just turned it up a few more notches and it was funny. But I mean, you could have just run the actual tape as a piece of satire because it's unbelievable we've got to. But before we get on to the hearing, yeah, Ray's piece ran before the hearing on Thursday,
right,
which of course is when we heard from his accuser and from Kavanaugh himself. And Ray's just going on about how surprised he is that nothing seems to have changed in a Jesuit school from the days when he went to Fordham right. Prep. He doesn't mention Fordham Prep, but I know that it is.
Right.
Because he's told me. So he went to a Jesuit prep school, as did Judge Brett Kavanaugh, went to a Georgetown Prep in Maryland. And about 30 or 40 years apart, and this is the point he's making,
right,
that he went to that school back, I guess, in the, 50 years ago would be what?
I don't know. Well, Ray was born in 1939, so he would have graduated high school roughly in 1957, so you're talking like 53, 54.
Okay, 50, the 50s. Right. So what Ray is – thank you for that. What Ray is saying is that the mores or the beliefs about the superiority of men at a Jesuit school – that he learned and it was taught in the 50s has not changed at all, judging on the behavior and mindset of Judge Kavanaugh. That's what he's saying, and he's surprised and depressed by that. A lot of the commentators didn't agree with him. Right. And there's a strong, of course, support for and against Kavanaugh that we're going to talk about. So Ray was going out there and saying that he basically was slamming Kavanaugh for having internalized these male dominant ideas that Ray is surprised still exists to such an extent at a Jesuit school in the 1980s, 30 years later.
Right. So, he starts out his piece, are boys really better than girls? I know you are one, but please try to be fair. This is a letter from an 8-year-old Helen to God, saying, God, I know you're a boy, but are boys really better than girls? It's cute. And then he does go into this. He went to, and you're right, he went to Fordham Prep and then Fordham University, and I forget where after that. But, I'm a Catholic school kid also. I did first through ninth grade in Catholic schools, and, you know, the priests are the ones that could touch the host back then. They're still priests, are only male in the Roman Catholic Church. They're the, you know, direct the intervener between you and God. They can, turn the host into the body and blood of Jesus Christ and act as God's agent to forgive your sins and all these other things, males only. So there's definitely the male supremacy heavy strain through the Roman Catholic Church. And so Catholic prep schools most likely reproduce that and have been since this became the ideology of the church back, in the early days, almost 2,000 years ago.
Well, actually, it goes to about the 10th century when the church banned forever the idea, or until now, the idea of women being priests because of the issue of inheritance. The priests were married, some of them, and then they were living on church property. When they died, they were given some of that away to their sons. Church wanted to hold on to all the property, so they said you can't get married. They didn't want priests to have children because they didn't want to lose any of their property. It's a completely absurd argument today. Obviously, the women belong as priests, I believe, in the Catholic Church. I also went to Catholic grammar school and a high school in the Bronx, not Fordham Prep. And so I know that environment that Ray's writing about and that Mr. Kavanaugh here comes from to some extent. Mine wasn't as exclusive maybe as Fordham Prep or the Georgetown Prep that he went to. But nonetheless, I understand this background of the church thinking. And as in my second piece, I write about a priest, actually, and what many of them are like, unfortunately.
Right. So he sets that up as the context for, what's happening in the Senate hearings. And I think more so in the culture too, but there's a presumption here, at least I'm reading it, looking at Ray's piece, that there's a presumption that Kavanaugh did in fact do it, or in any event that he has these attitudes. And, there are probably examples of that in the record. They're not really being cited anywhere though. And so I'm wondering what the basis of Ray's knowledge is, other than his experience with the contextual.
Yeah.
And then from there, maybe we could, embellish that a little bit.
Well, what he's doing here more, I think, than saying that Kavanaugh is guilty is that he's highlighting the attitudes that Kavanaugh is not guilty being put forward by some members of the committee. For example, he quotes Hatch, apparently, who said that he knew that the allegation by Deborah Ramirez, the one, his classmate, Kavanaugh's classmate from Yale,
right,
that was phony. And then Hatch was asked why, and he said, because I know it is. That's right. Why. So I think that this is clearly not a good enough answer.
Right.
I know that it's a phony charge. Why? Because right. I just know it is.
Because I know
so
it.
So Ray's talking. I think Ray, yeah, I think Ray's pointing out more that this attitude of male supremacy that still exists in the Jesuit schools also exists on the committee, which he funnily says is a chairman of the of a committee like this is a kind of a god in Washington, and a male one in this case, of course. So I think Ray is pointing out the attitudes that are on the committee as well, rather than saying that for sure he knows that those charges against Kavanaugh are true. I think he's talking more about the attitudes that are prevailing around it, this male dominant, male supremacist ideas.
Yeah, I don't think that's
allowing him to maybe usher his way through. As you know, the committee did not subpoena any of the witnesses, particularly Mark Judge, who Kavanaugh's accuser Christine Blasey Ford says was in the room when Kavanaugh attacked her. That he was never subpoenaed. He was allowed to submit a statement, which of course is not the same as being interviewed by the FBI or by a senator. And now it was only under enormous pressure, and finally Jeff Flake's decision that the FBI is brought into this at all, and they've been talking to Mark Judge for the last 2 days. So there was this resistance on the Republican side to any of these allegations rather than taking them seriously, which they should have. This is what Ray's saying, and I agree with.
Yeah. I mean, not controversial that the Senate is a repository of some of the most reactionary, social, cultural, political, ideological concepts on the planet. And in fact, it's very, existence. This is a manifestation of a lot of that. It's an anti-democratic one as well. The thing that I'm curious and want to maybe probe a little bit here. It was an affidavit, a sworn testimony that came from the rebuttal witness, and it is not the same as being cross-examined. But as a lot of folks have been pointing out, this isn't a criminal trial either.
Right.
And so when you have someone that makes an accusation and then says, and by the way, part of the fact pattern is this, that, and the other thing. The standard that I faced in civil litigation is an affidavit from another party that I don't get to examine that gets presented as a rebuttal evidence. Okay, you said this happened. Here's sworn testimony from someone that you named as a witness that said, no, it didn't. End of allegation. Next. And so, that's not an unusual standard. And then the larger context is the framing of this happened not... How long did it take her to bring this, 30 years or whatever? But this was presented to Feinstein in July, and it was not presented to the committee until the very end of the process. Clearly, whatever the intent is, I'm not going to try to impute intent, but I think it's obvious, to push this out further so that it's closer to the election. What you have, in essence, is the society being divided up on this question, with a very large percent of women siding, that basically this woman was victimized. That's how they're polling. That's half the electorate. So at the margins, it's going to definitely have an impact on the election, and it seems like that's what it was tailored to do.
Well, obviously, this is a highly politicized situation. That's what you're describing. And in my piece, I try to separate this woman and sexual attacks in general from that. Now, yes, we only learned about this very close to the vote coming up on Kavanaugh, and yes, closer to the November elections. But it's not clear to me exactly what happened when the Democrats, Feinstein, got this letter from Ford, in which she asked for anonymity. Feinstein said in the hearing that she tried to honor that anonymity, and they did not reveal this information because of that, but that they asked the FBI late. It is late in the process. They asked the FBI several weeks later to look into this, and the FBI did not want to. Now, in the Anita Hill hearings, the FBI was brought in. It is not uncommon for in the confirmation process for a background check to be done by the FBI. The Republicans refused to do that. And Kavanaugh had several times he was asked during the hearing by Democratic senators whether he would welcome that, and he did not welcome that. So you have to wonder why not. So whether this is a conspiracy by the Democrats to withhold this and spring it at the last minute is not clear to me, because she did not want her name revealed.
Right.
And according to Feinstein, the people who probably revealed it were her friends, who she did discuss it with. They probably told reporters who then showed up at her house and at her workplace. And there was one reporter who came up to her inside the classroom where she teaches, and she thought it was a student, turned out to be a reporter. So she got kind of fed up by all this and decided to go on the record late in the game. And then the Washington Post wrote its story, and then we know what happened. It led to her appearing at this hearing on Thursday. I'm trying to separate. There's no question the Democratic Party has used the identity politics as their main argument for being a progressive party, while at the same time, you know, hiding behind that to pursue a very aggressive foreign policy. That's no different than the Republicans. That's hegemonic, and that is caused enormous suffering around the world to expand American power. So I have been highly critical in my writings on television, on radio, about the Democratic Party's foreign policy, and that the identity politics is not all there is to being progressive. It's not to say that those aren't important issues about LGBT, about sexism, about the tax on women. So I don't think that is an issue that should be dismissed, but it shouldn't be the only thing the Democrats talk about, or the main thing, and hiding behind that. But in this case, I think that's not what's happening here. I do believe Ford. I don't know for sure. It's not a criminal case, but I think she was believable. A lot of people, including on the Republican side, apparently thought she was believable until Kavanaugh stormed into the hearing room with his own defense, with his ballistic defense. So I don't think that this is what's going on, because I don't think there's proof that the Democrats are using her or invented her. She's not a plot by the Democrats in terms of let's get her. The timing, according to Feinstein, was delayed because they didn't want to reveal her name, and they were trying, but they did ask too late for the FBI to get involved. So that is suspicious, that clearly this probably was a tactical move on the Democrats to do it late to try to stall his vote. Now, another point I make in my piece, Don, I think you'll agree with, and we disagree on some of this, is that the Democrats did a terrible job in going after him on his serious record of helping the George W. Bush administration to perhaps approve torture memos, surveillance, and other criminal activity of the W. Bush administration. He was part of the legal team.
Right.
He was in there, and he was also part, of course, of the Ken Starr thing. He's a right-wing nut. He's a right-wing extreme partisan. And this is the main reason why I'm saying he should not be on the court. Plus, his emotional outbursts did not bode well for somebody on the court. So aside from whether the woman is telling the truth or not against him, he shouldn't be on the court for his demeanor, for his partisanship, and for the fact that his record at the Bush administration. And this has been overlooked too much, I think.
Well, I definitely want to go there. Some of the other things we can come back to. But first of all, let's take a look at who's on the committee. Because, you know, the entire, you know, material that you just described, the torture memos, the whole, you know, post 9/11 environment that was constructed, that he was one of the, if not architects, one of the bricklayers that the architects hired, to accomplish these things. You know, we've got Feinstein. Okay, I don't think she wants to open that whole question up, because where was she while all of that was going on? She was squarely in that same corner. Durbin, yep. Leahy, these people are on the same page as Kavanaugh as to those matters, have been since 2001. And so they're not going to go there because they don't oppose those policies. And what that means, what that not just implies or suggests, but practically guarantees, is that the next person that comes along that is satisfactory to them is also going to be on the same page as far as those actual policies go.
Yeah, I agree. That's why they are hiding again behind this identity politics issue, it seems like. But I was just trying to point out in this piece that we cannot sweep this woman, Christine Blasey Ford, into this plot or this democratic machinations, that something really happened to her, and it could very well have been Kavanaugh who did it. So I think this is serious, and we have to take sexual people who are claim they were attacked sexually very seriously, plus not dismiss them because they can't remember something from 36 years ago, when there's plenty of evidence, and I give my own evidence, what happened to me, that you forget all those other details, but you remember exactly who did what to you and when, and not when necessarily, but who it was and what was done. So I'm trying to defend her in the in this mess, this political mess in which both sides are, of course, again, behaving terribly, and the Democrats particularly, and as you just pointed out, wanting to defend this post 9/11 aggressive foreign policy. They don't want to go there, as you just said. But what concerns me is even if they derail, as you just said, if they derail Kavanaugh, the next guy that's going to be nominated is going to be another right winger, probably by Trump, with the same things. So, in other words, if this new guy doesn't have any, and they'll probably really check out if there is a new guy, they're going to check out his background a lot better than they probably checked out Kavanaugh's.
Right.
If he has no allegations of anything like this against him, will he sail through, even if he has proven himself to be pro-corporate and pro aggressive? I mean, if he doesn't have the same kind of legal background that Kavanaugh had working inside the administration, but that if his record on the bench, wherever he's been, has been the right-wing one that the Trump administration would want, why then we would see the Democrats would not probably oppose him. So it's sad that they are not opposing him on really serious issues, but that they are on this sexual attack allegation. I'm just saying you have to take that attack allegation seriously, not to mean this woman who may very well have been attacked by this guy, and his behavior at the hearing also disqualifies him. These are the points I'm making in my piece. I don't think he belongs there for a number of reasons, and I hope that he isn't. But I'm not worried. I'm worried about the next guy who would come along.
I mean,
Democrats would not oppose it.
As far as his performance or whatever at the hearings, I don't have any opinion on that. Honestly, having been subjected to the media attention that had gone on over the last week, if he in fact had nothing to do with this event that was described, which does not say that nothing happened to her, but perhaps since she's got memory lapses, with all these other aspects of it, perhaps she has that. A memory lapse with that too. It's possible. And if that's the case, then his behavior at this thing, I look at that in an entirely different light and not as disqualifying for being on the Supreme Court. And in any event, that pales to he should be disqualified based on policy. And here's the thing. The policy that we're discussing, I think that would be disqualifying torture and all of those things. The things that people are discussing that are the actual, the political fare that gets dished up every time people refer to the Supreme Court and how presidential election matters because of court appointments and Supreme Court, blah, 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 in the public discourse. It means, in general to people, Roe v. Wade, same-sex marriage, voting rights on occasion comes up. It should come up all the time. War powers. Those are the things that people are talking about when they talk about the court. But if you look at the docket, that's a minute part of the business of the court. And there are some things that take up a lot of the court's attention, including, in particular, commercial cases where there are, on occasion, billions of dollars that affect the public in general and lots of the classes of people who are also affected by Roe v. Wade, voting rights, etc. In a more material way, though, things that have to do with, for example, the bankruptcy law, whether you can discharge student debt in bankruptcy when they change the law, is that constitutional, etc., etc. That's the real fare at the Supreme Court. That's not ever part of the discussion. We have no idea whether this judge or this judge or this judge, how they rule, what their record is on cases that have to do with some very weighty issues that are never part of the conversation, where if someone is willing to allow corporations to own everything, including your soul, let's say, for some case in the Supreme Court, but they're against Roe v. Wade or vice versa, people will decide whether that person should be on the court based on their position on Roe v. Wade, as opposed to something that might be much weightier, as most of the business of the court is, in fact.
Well, in Kavanaugh's case, he only apparently made 24 written opinions, and all the time, 12 years, he's been on a federal court. So I did not go through all 24. I didn't go through any of them, to be honest with you, and I don't know whether he touched on those financial and commercial matters you described. But yes, it should be an important part of this. So the idea that we've come down to trying to stop him based on a sexual assault allegation, it shouldn't have come to this. He should have been opposed on these other issues. But if they can get him on this and we don't want him on the court, that's fine with me. And I also found her believable, too. And I don't find him believable. So I think this is good enough reason to get rid of this guy. And I hope that that's what happens. But you're absolutely right. This whole process is for such a serious decision as this, lifetime appointment. And I totally oppose the idea of a lifetime appointment for anybody. Even the Pope. I think that they should be like a 10-year limit on your time on the Supreme Court. It's just ridiculous to give. And of course, they're always choosing younger guys. He's 53, so you might get a good 25 years out of him or more.
Right.
So this is wrong. But no, the whole process is not what we'd want it to be. Plus, apparently the Republicans only dumped a whole bunch of documents onto the Democratic side at the very last minute. So they didn't want them. There's all these games going on. They didn't want them to really examine his record as closely as they could have.
Right.
But as you pointed out, Don, we know about this stuff from the Bush administration for a long time, what his role was, what his role in the Ken Starr investigation was. And this has not come up. And it should have. And it's because, as you point out, the Democrats don't agree with most of this aggressive foreign policy.
Right.
And so they could only use a sexual attack allegation against him, which, again, I think should be taken very seriously. But that is not the right way to take this. This should have been he should have been nailed on all of these things. But he wasn't, because Democrats fail us once again, as the Republicans always do.
Yeah. We're getting close to time. I think we're at about 4 minutes or something. one of the things that I think is important to well, there are two things that are important to remember. Number one, in general, you know, this is a huge cultural event. We've had them one after another, basically, lately, because of the whatever. So somebody's driving, a public agenda very hard. That's almost wall to wall throughout the media, and it's in our face constantly now for quite some time. What you have going on here, aside from everything else, is a debasement in the public conversation that's sort of tantamount to peeing in the jury pool on the concept of the presumption of innocence, whether or not that should apply to someone who is, you know, in essence, at an elaborate job interview. The idea that someone can be, you can fact find by deciding if someone is believable or not by looking at them on television. You have people that are entrenched on both sides of this in a belief that they're right and wrong without there being the necessity for any kind of fact finding. And that, to me, as that gels in the public mind as a consequence of this, that's a pretty troubling thing all by itself. And, you know, it's sort of like what was done to the public consciousness over a period from the mid-60s onward as they tried to culturally undo what the Warren Court had done in terms of having people understand that just because the cops said they did it doesn't mean they did it. And to sort of try to force that kind of a change in the culture so that it fed into the court system and started producing outcomes along the lines that they intended. That was countered with a very aggressive public relations campaign throughout our media, where it's always technicalities that, you know, mass murderers and rapists are getting off on and such. And this seems to me to risk taking another step down that road culturally and a big one. What do you think of that?
Well, first, it is a job interview, but under oath, so not your average job interview, clearly. And when you go for a job, you are trying to show your prospective employer that you are qualified for the job and you have the right character for the job. So anybody who comes forward and says, or there's any evidence that comes forward that you may not have that character, you know, has to be looked at. And I think that's what's going on here. And I don't see any problem with that whatsoever. I think the culture you're talking about goes back again. One aspect of it is to what Ray was talking about, a culture of male dominance and supremacy, and that women were not, and that sexual assault victims were not taken seriously at all. And now they are starting to be. And I think that's an important advancement in our society. And I think that the fact that this thing took place on national TV, where the people on the trading floor on Wall Street stopped everything to watch it, this type of thing, the country was transfixed about this. And it's about power. It's about the relationship of this nobody, this woman nobody ever heard of, coming out of California and then suddenly appearing on national TV inside of a Senate hearing room under oath, making these allegations against an enormously powerful man, is a very important moment in our recent history, because we are trying to redress that imbalance, the power of a man like Kavanaugh, and then the lack of power of a woman like Christine Blasey Ford being given this, and you probably don't agree with this, but being given this platform to tearfully explain what this guy did to her. And again, sex victims have different types of memory lapses. They don't remember a lot of details. This is, should not be disqualifying. But that she can come there and bring this guy to come out swinging like he did, to show that perhaps, you know, he doesn't want to take this crap because he doesn't think this woman has any right basically to challenge him for this job. This has been, he was groomed for this. He's been put on a path, his privileged path, from a young age. He can get away with whatever he wants to, and he's going to be able, he just needs this job. How dare she say anything about it? So that's the way I see the cultural shift here, that we're seeing women being taken more seriously and sex victims being taken more seriously, and that it's a powerless person against a very powerful person who's being given a platform to challenge this guy. The Democrats should have challenged him, as we said, on all the other issues, but I think it was right to bring her there and to challenge him in front of everyone. And let's see if the FBI comes up with something to corroborate what she said. It is not a criminal case. He is looking for this job, but if some of that could be corroborated and he did do this, or it seems more likely that he did this, then I don't think he deserves this job.
Joe, thanks a lot. We'll speak with you again next week and see how this all turns out. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. America is a house deeply divided, and that division only continues. The entire Brett Kavanaugh saga has turned into blood sport, demanding each and every one of us pick a side. We're in new territory, and that place is called Winner Takes All. Crosstalking Cultural Wars, I'm joined by my guest, Christopher Niewiem in Washington. He's a Republican strategist. In Los Angeles, we have Robert Barnes. He is a trial lawyer in criminal and constitutional law. And in Chattanooga, we cross to Brian Joyce. He is the host of The Brian Joyce Show. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Who gets to go first? Well, the guy that got up earliest for this program, and that means it's Robert in Los Angeles. Okay, let's talk about the Brett Kavanaugh thing in a much broader cultural and political sense here. What does it represent to you? Because I'm even willing to admit my introduction is a bit over the top, but I'm trying to make a point here, because it does seem like we're in an era, an epoch where one wins and one loses, and that is not part of the American tradition. Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, no doubt. We have these evidentiary standards and due process standards and legal standards that we've created over hundreds of years in the United States. And basically, all of them are being scratched and scrapped overnight. And what's happening is we're in it. You know, I'm just waiting for when the next nominee comes up. They said, well, when he was in kindergarten, he pulled Susie's hair. So, I mean, it's getting to that kind of place where we're going back 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. We're going back to disputed events and what happened at a party on a particular night. And when we get to that place, then at some point we're no longer in a place where truth matters, we're no longer a place where justice matters, and where the Me Too era has gone so far out of reach that it's no longer about justice or fairness, it's solely about power, and it is about just who wins and who loses.
Okay, Brian, the criticism of the left through this, I think just utter nonsense, I'm sorry, that's my opinion of the whole thing, is that the left just continues to move the goalpost. And they're being very disingenuous when they say they want justice. I think Robert already said it. They just want power. Because advice and consent is about if you're competent to serve on the court. That's all the Senate committee is really supposed to ask. How do you respond to moving the goalpost? Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I think it's absolutely true that Democrats are playing politics with this nomination and they're trying to delay the nomination. But to that point, I would argue, why shouldn't they? I mean, when you talk about, well, really the only litmus test should be, shouldn't this person be qualified for the court? We did have somebody who was qualified for the court in Merrick Garland. And last I checked, it was the Republican Party, not Democrats, who left him sitting on the bench without a hearing for a year. Now they're trying to shove Brett Kavanaugh through in a month or less. Why did Mitch McConnell leave Merrick Garland, who was a phenomenally qualified justice? Why did he leave him sitting there for a year without even giving him the decency of a hearing? I think what Democrats are doing here is they're taking the obstructionism and they're just shoving it right back in the face of Republicans. I think it's just par for the course in Washington, D.C.
Okay, fair enough, Christopher, but one could make the argument, I certainly would make the argument that this is different in the sense that it's just not playing politics. It's really it's destroying a process and it's destroying a tradition. I mean, sure, fine, you get your power. But what's it worth when you don't have a process that is that everyone can agree to? And I think this is the new territory we're in. Go ahead, Christopher in Washington.
I think you're correct. I think that the real loser here is the American citizen in terms of the faith in the process, their faith in what's true, what's not true. I think the truth is the furthest thing from the interest of all these tribal forces. And I think you're right, Peter. There's almost kind of puts you in this default position of which tribal side am I going to gravitate to? And the way that news is presented, it's so viciously partisan one way or the other in terms of that. Now, in terms of some of the other commentary that was just presented, I would agree that, you know, why are they trying to advance this? Because they're politicians who don't care about anything except for getting what they want. It's hypocrisy. We know that. But the question is, how has the way this been presented, has it been healthy? And I think it's not, because truth is not what's being sought here.
Okay. Robert, you know, in looking at this whole thing, I think it's gotten down to performance, anger, and destruction theater. Maybe this judge drank a lot in college. Well, I was in college and a lot of people drank, but he was at the top of his class. He's been at the top of everything he's ever pursued here. Okay. Again, he has the merits of doing that. When I look at all this destruction theater and performance anger, they never talk about his achievements. The left, it seems to me, does not like competence. And this is part of this weaponization of the Me Too movement. Go ahead, Robert, in Los Angeles.
No doubt. Everything about this has come across like a old-style, Soviet-style show trial. It feels like watching those old documentary videos of Cuba in the early 1960s, where it is all about theater, where it is all about drama, where it is all about the show. And the frightening thing is, that not only is the Senate advice and consent process supposed to be a hallowed constitutional process that follows a certain set of standards, but there's no equal set of standards being applied. I mean, here you have Congressman Ellison, who there's allegations against, who they're going to dismiss those allegations because they said, well, there's not corroboratory evidence, there isn't independent sufficient evidence to proceed, and yet, as to Kavanaugh, entirely different standards are being applied. So it's if we're going to go down
that
path, we used to have...
There is some evidence there that a complaint was made here. Go ahead, finish up, Robert, in Los Angeles. Go ahead.
So we value equal standards because we want the same standards to be applied to us when we are on the opposite side of the equation. And I understand the approach of the Democrats in the sense of saying, well, politically you obstructed, so we're going to obstruct. But they're doing so at the expense of due process. They're doing so at the expense of evidentiary standards that have been well established for more than 200 years. They're doing so at the expense, ultimately, of the Me Too movement, who will be discredited in part by this show trial, by this fake trial that took place.
Brian in Chattanooga, reflect upon how the media, particularly the liberal media, and I'm thinking of the Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, I mean, they've injected themselves into this process here. I mean, this latest allegation of the serial rape gang, my goodness, I watched that interview on NBC. I mean, NBC should be ashamed of itself. Did they even ask the woman the questions before they went on to tape it? I mean, not only did she look like a fool, NBC looked like even a bigger fool because they're injecting themselves into this here. Brian, please reflect on that.
Yeah, if you think NBC News is bad, you should try watching Fox News. I mean, you know, I didn't catch the piece that you're talking about. The media does what the media does. They cut these stories. That's what they're supposed to do. If they cover their own political bent, well, again, that's just sort of par for the course, which is where we are in the United States. But I want to go back to something. You know, when you were making the point that liberals just seem to be battling this man Kavanaugh on any front that they can, and they just don't want to see a competent conservative justice on the court, I would remind you that Neil Gorsuch never faced this kind of scrutiny. He never faced these kind of accusations. John Roberts never faced these kind of accusations. And on the other side of the aisle, neither did Elena Kagan or Sonia Sotomayor. I mean, the fact of the matter is we've had three different justices in the past 10 years placed on the Supreme Court, two Democrats, one Republican. None of them faced these allegations.
Okay,
I mean, I'm not saying I don't think the evidence is there to conclude that Brett Kavanaugh is a serial sex predator. I think there's more than enough evidence to suggest that he was a little bit of a wild child. And the reason why these allegations are coming out and they didn't come out on, say, Neil Gorsuch is because there are none of these allegations against Neil Gorsuch.
All right, Christopher. So if I can just condense what Brian just said there, then allegation is conviction. Okay, but I don't understand that. That's the leap of faith I don't agree with, don't understand, think it is wrong. Okay, just because other people weren't accused doesn't mean Kavanaugh is guilty. Go ahead, Christopher.
I agree.
I agree with Robert in terms of the process. And my recommendation was I don't think these confirmation hearings should be televised anymore. I think we should be able to hear them and read transcripts and actually look at the rule of law. I feel like everything has just become so fanatical. And then for Brian, I wouldn't disagree, but I think Fox has been more than fair. Fox
I think
has
so,
said
too.
That Dr. Ford seems very credible and that it's been concerning. But here's my only issue is I don't believe it's a civic duty to hold something for 35 years and then to come out and refuse to do it in your home state of California. I think there's a lot of suspicious things that have been coming out in terms of motive. And when you got the Democratic Party coming out there saying, well, many people are trying to recruit Mr. Avenatti to run for president. Here's a guy who represents adult film stars digging up fake news stories left and right. And that's going to be the guy to take the lead. And it's no surprise because as was just pointed out, there's a police report with Keith Ellison. There is evidence. And you have the woman that's running to replace him in Congress saying, well, the first thing I'm going to do is impeach the president. And when asked what she'd impeach him on, she had no clue what she was talking about. So, and we've got, the list goes on. Senator Gillibrand, I really, really believe Dr. Ford. You're friends with Harvey Weinstein. I mean, the Democrats have absolutely become uncredible from head to toe on issues of sexual assault, in my view.
Okay, let me go to Robert before we go to the break here. I mean, if you look at the pattern from the Ford letter that got to Feinstein all the way to now, convince me it wasn't all pre-planned and packaged. Convince me it wasn't. Go ahead, Robert.
Sure. I mean, I think the only thing that could defend Ford is that she does give off signs of a misplaced memory. So I defended a lot of people that have been victimized by various forms of abuse and assault. And I learned early on how to try to distinguish between what was a good case and what was not a good case. And she gives all the signs of a bad case. Now, that means that she could possibly sincerely believe it, and she could have misattribution issues, so that for her, it may not be a politically manipulated event. I have no doubt, however, that Senator Feinstein and her so-called attorneys in this case were, in fact, politically manipulating this from beginning to end. So I think that the only question is whether Ford was a co-complicit participant or just another victim of a politicized witch hunt process that has made the advice and consent process into sort of a laughingstock and a joke and a tabloid TV show.
We're going to have to go to a break here, but Rachel Mitchell, she is a compelling person in what she wrote. We might talk about that after our break. After our short break, we'll continue more discussion on political correctness in the United States. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, let me go back to Brian. Brian, Pat Buchanan came out with a very interesting piece in the last couple of days. And I read it in the American Conservative. And essentially what he's saying is that this whole saga around Kavanaugh is a preamble for the Democrats, if they retake the House after the midterms, to impeach Donald Trump. Do you agree with that? His argument is really quite compelling. Go ahead, Brian.
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe it's a bridge too far, a leap too far to say that Democrats will automatically move for impeachment. But the fact of the matter is, I have no doubt that Democrats will do their job and investigate Donald Trump, for which he should be investigated. The amount of scandal surrounding this White House is absolutely unprecedented. The Republicans have no backbone or political will to dig into any of this stuff whatsoever. If this were a Democrat in the White House, obviously that Democratic president would have already been impeached. We know this. So, I think what's fair is fair and what's just is just. I would expect Democrats to move at least in the direction of investigations into the Trump administration. The FBI is already doing that, obviously. Robert Mueller is already doing that. In impeachment, I don't know if they'll go straight for impeachment.
Christopher in Washington, what do you think? Because I'll express my humble opinion. Well, the Democrats don't need any facts. They just want conclusions that they want. I mean, it seems quite obvious to me. I mean, the Kavanaugh case is a perfect example there. I mean, it's so scant on evidence. It would be laughed out of court. I mean, I guess Robert could speak to that, okay? But Christopher, I really think this is pervading the popular culture right now. It started at the universities now, and it's a winner take all. I get everything. Shut up, nod your head, and do what you're told. That's it in a nutshell. Christopher.
I'd largely agree. I mean, I would disagree that this is unprecedented. I mean, look at the Clinton presidency. Certainly he was impeached, and there was enough there for the precedent for a president which the Congress would look into. But I think we have to look at the broader aspect of what's going on. If you look at deplatforming, you look at what's happened with Twitter and others, where you have someone like, for example, Alex Jones, who's deplatformed, but then you have someone who, like Louis Farrakhan, said much crazier stuff. He's not. The left is trying to diminish the First Amendment rights of those that they disagree with. They're absolutely becoming everything they supposedly object to. And we've seen it again and again. And we've seen it in this particular outfit where, you know, this is a big concern in terms of the issue of being heard and sexual assault. And yet, just look at current news. Look at they've been on the wrong side of almost every one of those issues. So in terms of burden of proof, I don't think it's there. I think there's a lot of doubt. And I think I'm just looking at that objectively in terms of not being able to know how they got to that location, this conclusion. And now the left's narrative is, well, you know, this man's temperament. Apparently you're supposed to be okay with getting falsely accused of sexual assault. So I think he reacted probably the normal way. But in terms of burdens of proof, it's just not there. And in terms of Gorsuch, who knows? I think the left is looking at the health of other members on the court and realizing, if we get Kavanaugh confirmed, what if the Republicans go ahead and get another justice Ginsburg steps down?
Exactly.
It's about power. They're swinging for the fences for a reason, because they're losing power.
You know, Robert, at one point in time, I don't know, it was in the last 36 hours, one of the leading hashtags was Kill Kavanaugh. But there was no, you know, there was no deplatforming of that. Okay, I mean, this is what I'm getting at with the media. They're magnifying this. They are the extension of the Democratic Party. Sometimes I think the media is actually running the Democratic Party. But this is why I think I've always found it very curious, because things get so totally magnified and exaggerated here when the media, when they start calling what they say are strikes and balls. Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, well, exactly. Instead of sort of post-traumatic syndrome, you have sort of a post-Trump derangement syndrome amongst large parts of the press and amongst large parts of the Democratic political establishment that is resorting to sort of Oleana style. If you go back to David Mamet, who wrote a play about 20 years ago called Oleana, in which he predicted and forecast that what was going to happen is not only was language going to be power, but accusation was going to be power. And that the mere ability to accuse, it goes back to the old Roman principle that said, if it's sufficient to accuse, then what happens of the innocent? And that's the problem here, is that's becoming, it's expanding within the culture. That if you want power over someone in your employment arrangement, if you're in your educational structure, in your political battle, in any aspect of life, then what you do is you simply accuse. And if we create a standard that says it's okay to presume the accusation is true, and then you have to rebut it, as is being written about in places like The New Yorker and all across the press in relationship to the Kavanaugh syndrome, then the whole case, and really it should be called a syndrome rather than a case, because it's creating a mindset and a precedent that is very precarious for people's basic civil liberties and for the presumption of innocence that should apply across our culture and society.
Brian, what happens if Kavanaugh ends up on the court? I'm predicting that he'll make it. What are the Democrats going to do? Do you think that they will try to impeach a sitting Supreme Court judge once he sits at the court? Do you think they'll try an impeachment process?
No. I mean, if they were going to do something like that, they would have done that a long time ago when they did have the power to do so. I do want to go back to this idea of derangement syndrome, and that's what's being thrown at Donald Trump and at his nominees. I always find it laughable, you know, the people who talk about Trump derangement syndrome, these are the same people who to this day deny that Barack Obama was even born in America. These are the same people who refuse to even give a hearing to Merrick Garland. I mean, Merrick Garland wasn't even given the decency of getting this far in the process. You tell me who's suffering from derangement syndrome, but no, the Democrats
wouldn't you agree that for 8 years Barack Obama was given a complete free pass by the liberal media? I mean, he was
I would not agree.
Okay.
No, I would not agree with that. No,
go ahead.
If you check ABC News, NBC News, CBS News, any scandal in the Obama administration, Benghazi, for example, was covered every night, top to bottom. So no, I completely reject that.
Christopher, what would you say to that?
I tend to disagree. I think that, I mean, the press, I mean, if you just look at the headlines, the narratives, the way things are covered, to President Trump's credit, here's a guy who's been attacked from every which angle leading up to the election, at war with Republicans, with Democrats, and he won because people are so distrustful of the establishment of media and the way things are covered. And every single day it's a hit piece on him. Every single day it's negative media coverage. And I think it's finally backfired, whether it's CNN, people crawling into puddles and pretending like the storm is worse than it is. It's just, it's become so ridiculous. It's real.
I know,
it's
I know.
It's fake. It's
I
that
know.
Stupid. And so...
oh, what?
So, I just think my
tell me about it. I live in Russia, and I watch what CNN and MSNBC says about it. I mean, good fiction. No, bad fiction, I would say. Jump in, because you're the odd man out. Go ahead.
When you have a presidential candidate, when you have somebody like Donald Trump calling Mexicans rapists, when you have somebody like Donald Trump cheating on three wives, having
that's
sex with a porn star.
Many, many, many times. He's talking about criminal. He's talking about...
Donald Trump, excuse me, I'll finish, thank you. Donald Trump has admitted he paid hush money to Stormy Daniels. If you're going to call Mexicans rapists and have sex with a porn star,
then his attorney paid.
You might want to expect some negative headlines, guys. You might want to expect that.
Well, let me go to Robert, because Robert's a lawyer.
But,
I mean, all these things. Look, I think even his supporters, Donald Trump is no choir boy. They didn't vote for him because they thought he was a choir boy. He's rude. He's boisterous. He's an egotistical maniac sometimes. But none of these things are illegal. And none of these things have to do with anything with policy. That's what I'm interested in, is policy. I personally would like to see a conservative judge on the Supreme Court because I like those policies. But the Democrats don't talk about any of those things. Robert.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got away from sort of policy principle debates and have become enamored and enmeshed in very much personality debates. And often, frankly, that's good terrain for Trump. I mean, Trump's belief is that if he's dominating the news, he's winning the news, no matter what the nature of those news is. So I think they've sort of got into the reality TV environment where they've lost a sense of perspective and in the process lost their sort of long-term institutional and intellectual edge that they could have with the American electorate in the process. So they've gone from being people who wanted to be the highbrow professors to being the Jerry Springers of politics. And I don't think that's ultimately in their institutional interest.
That's fair.
And I think they should reexamine that.
That's very, very. Brian, do you think that there's going to be a backlash against this campaign against Kavanaugh? Do you think that that might be a reason for Republicans to go out and vote?
I don't think there's going to be a backlash, no. I think the Democrats are going to retake the House. There are polls out this week indicating that a majority of Americans right now don't feel very good about the Kavanaugh nomination. I think it's going to backfire with Democrats with the same people it would have backfired with them anyway. I mean, the fact of the matter is, look, they are playing obstructionism. Yes. I mean, that's of course what they're doing. They're trying to delay this nomination through the midterms. That's politics. You know, when people ask, why did it take so long for them to bring these allegations to the table? Well, obviously, yes, they're waiting till the last minute to try to screw the Republicans. I think it's only going to help their cause with their base. And right now it looks like most independents are not exactly enamored with Brett Kavanaugh.
Christopher, all I can say to that is that what about the polls in 2016 and the polls today? Why should we believe the polls now?
First of all, we just have to thank Brian for telling the truth right there. What he just said is what Senate Democrats won't say, which is that they waited to the last minute to try to pull that. I think you know, it's really interesting to see. But did anyone else find it odd that the attorneys were working pro bono or that they were covering polygraphs? I've been searching my whole life, Peter, for attorneys that work pro bono. So thank goodness we've actually found attorneys that are just so honest and they're so great, they work for free. I need their number because last I checked, I know lots of innocent people that have been working with attorneys and it bankrupts the average American.
I think
don't trust the process.
But I think
anymore.
If you had Deborah Katz as your attorney, she would make sure you were convicted of the most heinous crime, even if you didn't do it. All right, gentlemen, we've run out of time. Many thanks to my guests in Washington, Los Angeles, and in Chattanooga. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk with us.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.